Thanks, Tribble.
Oh,
that was a Tribble.
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
Or good night.
Or good night.
I don't see you later. Good night.
Good night and good luck. We'll see you guys later.
Thanks, everybody.
The Jim Carrey
Shortest
thing
from podcast ever.
Yeah, that was a good show. I remember. Remember when we said hello? That was so good. So good.
I feel like I can look back on it now and laugh.
The Truman Show?
No.
No. Oh, podcast.
I'm just talking about the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah, it was a good.
It felt so young and naive back then.
Have you guys seen Cosmos?
I have not seen Cosmos.
The one with Carl Sagan? Yeah, it was great.
Yes, it's on Netflix.
30 years ago.
You know, I actually sat my kids down the other night and played for them Carl Sagan's Pale Blue Dot. Mm-hmm. Every sinner, every hopeful child. It's just magnificent. I never don't get chills.
So that's a great speech and a great video. The Pale Blue Dot. If you look on YouTube, a lot of people have put video behind it,
yep,
and great montages. One of the famous speeches. Cosmos is very interesting.
The new
Cosmos that Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah.
It premiered at South by Southwest. He did a keynote, I think, before the day before you did a keynote. And it's on Fox, which is interesting.
Yes.
Home of science.
Yes.
The Fox Network. I mean, you're talking about wide reach in terms of networks.
Yes.
Produced by Seth MacFarlane.
Seth MacFarlane, yeah.
The Family Guy.
Okay.
A Family Guy.
Okay. And Ted.
Yes.
And the We've Seen Your Boobs song at the Oscars last year.
Yes. And also, one of the lead writers and directors is Brandon Braga, producer of Star Trek.
Oh.
He was of Enterprise and later stuff, right?
That Star Trek fans don't particularly like. He was one that people said kind of ruined Star Trek. So maybe that was Rick Berman.
But yeah, that was Rick Berman.
Controversial, regardless.
So did they get Neil deGrasse Tyson because everybody loves him to kind of counteract the Seth MacFarlane and Brandon
he's
Braga?
A recognizable face in science and astrophysics. And did you read the story?
But also science communication.
Yes.
Neil deGrasse Tyson is... We have a plethora of great science communicators right now, but he is absolutely at the pinnacle.
And he's an anomaly statistically.
He's a black astrophysicist. He actually was telling me he got some crap at one conference he was leading because they had no women, and he was like, you know, I can't even remember the number, but he told me exactly how many black astrophysicists there were, and it is a very small two-digit number. And he goes, so please don't give me shit about diversity here.
Yeah. Oh my God. But the show is really interesting from a production standpoint. I've seen the first three episodes.
Yeah.
They're out right now. There more might be out by the time this podcast comes out, but it's very dramatic. There's a lot of special effects.
Oh, really?
I'll describe one or two scenes. There's one scene in the first episode where he stands in front of the Big Bang, Neil deGrasse Tyson, puts on sunglasses and watches the Big Bang happen in front of him.
the pictures I saw of the set reminded me of the cigarette smoking guy from the Mass Effect games.
So in terms of when you're talking about a set, they travel across, they're literally traveling across the universe on a spaceship.
A mind spaceship.
A spaceship of imagination, they call it. He's literally standing on the bridge and there are holodeck-like characters. He interacts with famous people of the past. There's one scene where he walks into the Hall of Extinction and looks like... longingly into the past,
right,
and sees the dinosaurs fade away.
Sees all of the
very contemplative.
It sounds like the way you're describing it sounds like you think it's sometimes successful and sometimes misses its mark.
I think it feels a lot like science propaganda, and I'm behind the science of it, but the way it's written,
you think
they've
tarted it up too much?
You could see the creationist version of this. Like if there was a creationist version of Cosmos and all the criticism I would have of that, of just saying things as if they were fact, I understand because of the time constraints, Cosmos suffers from the same thing.
He just says
things.
Well, but I mean, that's what the original Cosmos did. I mean, in a lot of ways, the idea is, hey, we live in an amazing universe. Most people don't appreciate that because we're too busy worrying about paying our taxes and like getting to the kids to school and stuff.
Right.
Here is a layman's intro to the universe in which we live.
And very much is a layman's intro.
And I know that, right. That's fascinating.
I,
Do you feel like it's also, I have to watch it so that the next time we do this podcast, I can talk about it. But do you feel like the tarting up of it makes it feel like science isn't interesting enough in and of itself, and therefore yes. we're trying to make it more exciting?
Yes. And therefore you have to put the dramatic music in, all the special effects in.
I wonder if I'll feel like that when I watch that.
That
tends to, we've gotten crap before. We have a piece that was in our show for a long time called The Warning Science Content. And we'd say, warning science content, and we'd sit down and do what we'd called a fireside chat, where Jamie and I were sitting, did you know that actually there was a molasses flood in Boston in the late 19th century, something like that. And we got crap for it. It was like, why are you saying warning science content? That makes people afraid of science. And we were like, no, that's the whole joke. The whole joke.
Yeah, but people don't get those jokes.
No, I know. But, you know, I also take the, you know, let the material speak for itself is obviously the ideal.
Yeah.
But and the material, again, without watching right. it, I can't really comment. Yeah, on
it really
process.
Feels like they're afraid people are going to get bored and turn it off. It also feels like the type of thing that it's ripe for putting on DVD and putting in classrooms
right.
for kids to watch.
Hmm. For like what age kids? So like third
middle
graders
school.
Or middle school?
School.
Okay.
Tyson's credited as a writer, right?
He's not a writer. One of the original writers of the original Cosmos, she's a writer.
But I'm just wondering how much he participated creatively in it because. Mm-hmm. Creatively, he's an incredible mind.
And he is, especially like his ability to distill super complex, scary astrophysics and like real confusing, complex, ambiguous stuff
yeah.
and make it clear and understandable is what he's phenomenal
and
at.
Also to bring humor and
yeah.
clarity and his wonderful avuncular attitude to it and make you comfortable. I mean, I can't get enough of facts are true whether you believe them or not. You know, he has so many of those.
Okay, so our homework, yes. you and me,
yes.
is to go watch Cosmos.
What did we do? We haven't watched any television lately. We haven't watched any. I've been doing a lot of writing because we have a bunch of stuff to work on. And we've been meaning to get to True Detectives, but we haven't.
You haven't watched it yet?
No.
Well, we can't talk about it.
I'll tell you what happened is my son, Thing One, decided to get into Lost. And the last 2 months, he's watched the entire series of Lost. And we sat down and watched the finale. He said, will you watch an episode with me? And I said, where are you? He said, I'm in the middle of season two. And I said, I will watch the season three opener with you because that is awesome.
Yeah.
If you remember season three opener
nope.
is...
I didn't watch Lost.
Season
watched
three
Lost.
Opener okay. is...
I watched the first the half town, season. The,
yes, this when you first meet Juliet.
Yes.
And then we watched the finale together, which, you know, it's funny watching the finale
I
again.
Like
what?
I like it. I
did too. Here's the thing about the finale. It doesn't explain huge chunks of what happened on Lost, but that
they
was
didn't
never.
Know.
It's clear that it wasn't their point. Yeah, no, I understand that. I understand that because I know Damon, yeah. and I know that. But at the same time, what they decided to do and what they achieved was an incredibly emotionally satisfying ending. If you were invested in the series,
yep.
And as someone, you know, we were watching this. For the first time in years, and each character, they touch the other characters and they see the visions and we're watching the two time streams come together. And again, so much is unexplained, but what is clear is that the show is incredibly cast. Really, the cast is astonishing. And the work that all those actors did is really impressive. The breadth of what they all went through narrative in the arcs of their characters. And they all brought incredible stuff to the show. Evangeline Lilly is an amazing actress. By the end, not to say she wasn't great at the beginning, but I also know that it was like her second acting job.
Yeah.
And it also gave you a bit of the scope of how far the show had traveled. It's easy to forget in the second to last season how far it took us to get to there, how alien the others seemed in the first two seasons, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. So I found the ending just as satisfying as I did the first time, and I really enjoyed it.
There's a wonderful DVD extra after the finale where they kind of poke fun at the unanswered questions.
Oh, really?
And the polar bears and all that stuff. And
the one thing I've been meaning to do is my cameraman, Saza, told me that there's some video online of Hurley and Ben running the island.
Well, that's the bonus.
And
that's
I'm dying to see that.
That
like
is,
stuff that happened.
Yes.
What? I didn't yes. know that. Yeah. It's like when you found out that the extra materials on the website, did you find out that one of those Battlestar Galactica characters was gay?
Oh,
he was the head of the bridge at the beginning.
Oh, Gata.
Gata, yeah.
You were getting ready to say something.
No, I was going to say something. But go ahead. You had a genuine segue.
I was just going to say, this is like our friend telling me the other day that Aladdin is actually set in a post-apocalypse, the Disney movie Aladdin.
And that's why
Robin Williams tells all the jokes, because he's from the past time.
Oh, wow.
It's all the magic is the remnants of the fallen technology and... Yeah.
Fascinating.
I know.
We've talked about Ferris Bueller's Day Off, right?
Wait, no.
That one of the interpretations of Ferris Bueller's Day Off is that it's all in Cameron's head, yes, like Fight Club, and Ferris Bueller is a construct of Cameron's.
Cameron, the mopey older.
Uh-huh.
The wow. One
yes.
In our
let it
theory,
wash over yeah. you.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that secretly Ferris was actually
it's
really
disproven.
Dying. That was his last day.
I'm sure it's disproven, but it is wonderful.
But
I love
Ferris
the
is
idea
the
of
devil
a secret
angel.
Fight Club hidden yeah. inside of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
The end of Ferris Bueller. He has the gun in his mouth. And
yes,
so good.
I'm so sad about Jennifer Grey's nose. Can I just say that? I really am. I have a thing I really like. Big noses.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Actually, I do know why.
It's because I had an early crush on Karen Schultz in high school.
Okay.
Karen Schultz had a wonderful nose.
If you're listening, Karen.
And I'm sad about what Jennifer Grey did to her.
It was
nose.
Unfortunate.
Yeah.
She's
gorgeous. She's still gorgeous.
Super gorgeous.
Just radically altered her appearance.
Yes.
She was really good on that show, that brief show where she played herself in a sitcom with Tony Shalhoub. Can't remember what that was called. Someone's
Jennifer
yelling at their
Grey's
right
Anatomy.
You are on fire today, Will.
It's because I haven't eaten. It makes you strong. We're going to talk. We have a topic today.
Yes. What is the topic?
We have the topic is the wish list, the prop list, the ultimate
list.
Dream list of props that you, because this was inspired last week
right.
when Norm was gently fondling your Captain America shield. Right.
If you know what I mean.
That wasn't a euphemism. It's right there. There's a shield right there.
Yes.
And if it was socially acceptable didn't block the microphone, he'd probably have it in his lap right now.
All right. There we go.
So this,
it's a lovely, lovely piece. Look
it
at
is
the
amazing.
Of that.
The inside of it is what
we
makes
had
it gorgeous.
Requests for seeing the inside.
Yeah.
It even has a label from the U.S. government, 1942, serial number Combat Shield Vibranium, which I know is controversial that it's not vibranium and adamantium. I'm going to have to get that later. And then it's manufacturer Stark Industries.
Mm-hmm.
All cool.
The leather straps and the mount yeah. for it and all that. It's what spun aluminum.
Yeah, spun aluminum. It's heavy. It's got real leather in the back. It's just a great piece.
And a fan made it.
A fan on the replica props.
Yeah, yeah. Captain America made it.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So we
had some people commenting that they wanted to hear more about it, but also the prop wish list.
We should do it at some point. We should do a video with like that and a couple of other small things that maybe don't have a lot of depth, but.
But the idea was that as I was holding it, we were talking about what are the things that are on your all-time wish list for props from movies or TV shows to own.
Because this was immediately added to your list when you knew it existed.
Right.
Sure. There's a long list. It's like asking what your favorite movies are of all time. And the way I was thinking about it, I had to split the dream list into three categories.
Oh, interesting.
I had to split it into hand props.
Yes.
Things to hold, yep. fondle, things that characters in movies held and had a right. significance, kind of yep. like in your totem in Inception, your movie totem.
Yeah.
Lightsabers.
Lightsabers, things to put on a desk. Costumes was the second
yep.
category.
Yep. Yep.
And wearables. And a third was sets or miniatures.
Interesting.
Set props and
miniatures. Yeah, yeah, or models.
Models.
We're surrounded
exactly.
by all of these things, right?
Right,
now.
Exactly.
Surrounded by all
and
of
you
these
have you have many.
And
each
you're
of
right,
these categories.
Those are three very good categories.
So I have my things in list.
Well, it's good
well,
that somebody
are you still
prepared.
Thinking?
I have unsuccessfully tried to become a minimalist over the last few years. So I have been actively trying to not acquire new things.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's a weird thing to do because I'm not necessarily a high-functioning hoarder, but when I cleaned out my garage, it was a terrifying experience.
Yeah.
So there are a handful of things that I would like to have, but I have the means to go get them if I wanted them, and I haven't done that. So I'm kind of, I don't know that I have a list.
Right.
I think it would be cool to have a lightsaber, but not enough to go out and spend the $100, $200, whatever it is to buy one or take the time to machine one.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, that would be a good project for me to learn.
A really fun project. Self-machine lightsaber, it's a perfectly valid thing on the list. Yeah.
Every Jedi makes their own lightsaber. It's exactly right.
I
made my first lightsaber.
And then you killed the other Jedis to get all the others? That is a lot of lightsabers in that case, Adam.
Well, there's a lot of Jedis to take care of. Norm?
So hand prop.
Yeah.
I would have to go with a Star Trek Next Generation tricorder.
Those are beautiful.
With the medical one with the pop-out thing?
Not the medical one. Okay. Just the normal one. Because mm-hmm. The top also has lights. Yep. The medical one with the thing that pops out.
Yep.
But I've seen those props in person.
Yeah, they're amazing.
And they're gorgeous.
The LEDs are gorgeous.
Yes.
You know, for less than the price of that, you can buy the Playmates one with an upgrade kit.
Oh, there's an upgrade kit. I have the Playmates one.
You know, it's funny, Norm. I'll take a look after this podcast. I might have two upgrade kits.
Wow.
And if I do, I'll just give you the other one.
Because Playmates did sell them. And yeah. It's like, $25. Yes, I'll buy one.
They look great. Mm-hmm. And they make great sounds, but the lights are shit.
And the mold of the case and everything is good.
It's cheap plastic. Yeah. And when you see the prop in person, though, what they use, there's the resin look of it, which looks fantastic. That's my hand prop.
Okay.
You already have a DL-44, which is one of
that's absolutely at the top of a lot of people's lists.
That's near the top of the list.
It was tough to come up with this list because we've been influenced clearly by being in this, in your presence.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a Blade Runner blaster that like Adam has made, but like,
I really like the Maltese Falcon, guys.
Right. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, part of the being in your shop a lot is that it amplifies, like seeing things amplifies the appeal of those things.
Because
I never would have said, oh, the Blade Runner gun, because it's in the movie for 3 minutes, right? It's not something that I was even aware of really until I saw your video years ago.
Yeah.
And you know, then I see it. I'm like, wow, that is a pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Costume wise, I'd say, just the front of the Iron Man mask with the electronics on the inside.
That is a kit. That I've is a kit that shows up on the RPF
I've
frequently.
Seen it. I've seen that.
It's not a very expensive kit. Next time I see it in the junkyard, I'll let you know.
Let me know. But I think that, I mean, it kind of doubles as a hand prop because there's that great promo still where Tony Stark, Ron Jr. Is holding it.
And it's got the grease pencil writing on it. It's wonderful.
I love that.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of the fake electronics on the inside of helmets and masks.
Yeah. Darth Vader did a beautiful job in that in episodes 2 and 3.
I saw that in person this past weekend.
Oh, really? Oh,
there's an exhibit
in San Jose.
Have you been to the exhibit?
I have not been to a Magic of the Myth or a Lucasfilm exhibit in a long time.
Oh my goodness. It's a minor tangent. there was a traveling exhibit for Star Wars. It was called Where Science Meets Imagination.
Right.
And it was originated at the Museum of Science in Boston, and it was props from all of the Star Wars movies, including full size ships, full size Millennium Falcons, costumes, props. You had Lobot's headgear.
Yeah,
is this the stuff that this is originally started? This was in this tour just, originally
I
originated
seeing
before
the
original
version
series.
Of this at Yerba Buena in like 1994. Right?
Yeah, I saw it at the Space Museum in probably 96 or 97.
So they kind of repackaged the traveling props.
Yeah.
And the theme for this exhibit was like, where does real science factor in? Or how is science taking inspiration from Star Wars? And this one was done in 2006 and it's been traveling for almost 8 years now.
And it originated at the Boston Museum of Science, which means it's probably really well written. That's a phenomenal museum.
And it's done the international tour, and in San Jose, it was a final stop, the 20th stop.
Oh.
And this past weekend was the final weekend of the final stop.
Oh, thanks for telling us, Norm.
Well, they're going to go, it's going to go around again. But the exhibit was fantastic. I got to see the inside of Vader's helmet, which was amazing.
The episode 3 Vader's helmet?
Vader's helmet, which splits off into 3 parts. Tying back into all-time want lists now.
Yeah.
In terms of models, 2 models I would want. One is the Enterprise D model from Star Trek Next Generation, the full size 6-foot model.
It's gorgeous.
and that X-Wing. The full, the big X-Wing.
The studio scale X-Wing.
Studio scale.
How big is studio scale?
No, no, they had one.
Oh, that was for explosions. The big ones, yeah. The studio scale for the animations were much more like, from my understanding, about this big. Yeah, they were about this big.
Yeah, because they were on a pedestal.
So the large ones were, I think, for the explosion shots.
Yeah, I'm saying about 1 or 2 feet wide for the studio scale for the animation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the one I saw in this big glass or acrylic case was at least 4 feet wide.
Wow.
It was gorgeous.
Wow. I have to say, from a model standpoint, it's an easy call. 3 foot Millennium Falcon. That is the studio scale main shooting model.
So they had a Millennium Falcon there was much bigger.
Five or six footer.
Yeah.
So that wasn't the most common one they used. And I actually have some shells of a Falcon that I bought from the molds from a wonderful guy named Tim Ketzer, who I know. And it's a long-term plan to put that together. Millennium Falcon, 3 footer with lights and everything, home run. That's absolutely
That's
hard to beat.
Get rid of your coffee table for that.
Yeah, God, it's just
build a coffee table around it, so
and
it's clear.
I have to say,
so you could, it's always in front of you.
You can buy a 3 foot Millennium Falcon. Master Replicas made one. And they're really expensive now. Like they've become, I bought one and I traded it for my Stormtrooper costume years ago. Mm-hmm. So the problem with the 3 foot Millennium Falcon that Master Replicas made was that it was made in like plaster. So it weighed a freaking ton.
Oh, that
and
had
it
to
made
be 50
me
or 60
so
pounds.
Mad when I got it. And it's the painting job was genuinely
so
terrible.
You couldn't pick it up and go.
It weighed 20 pounds.
Even if the paint job was great and it was plaster, it's not going to age well, right?
No, they have aged well, and I'm not exactly sure about what that. Okay, I should backtrack. The biggest problem that prop replica companies have had with big spaceships like the Millennium Falcon and the Enterprise D is that they droop, and you can't to build tooling to mold a 3 foot Millennium Falcon is hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's really crazy expensive.
And they'll sell, 5,000 of them
right.
at most?
It's not enough to amortize the cost. Enterprise D and Millennium Falcon, traditionally you'd mold them in resin, but resins, they creep over time. You expose them to heat and light and all sorts of stuff, and they can change their shape. And there's all this stuff about Enterprise D's, warping. The original Icons Enterprise D's drooping, and they have to have steel infrastructure. It's a big problem. And I understand that. And it's expensive to do fiberglassing on a per part basis. And I also know it's really hard to get, people to paint this stuff really well. Yeah. So there's lots of painting tutorials for repainting your Millennium Falcon. The Millennium Falcon, the fiberglass shells that I have will make the one of my dreams with lights in it and, the cockpit and getting it all exactly right. So that's
how are you painting it?
How am I painting?
Yeah, are you going to paint it by hand? And
I'm going to paint it with airbrush paints, and I'm going to weather it with the techniques I know from industrial light.
You're
going
to roll back to ILM days.
In fact, actually, and this is a specific decision that I've made with it. There are parts guides to every single part on the Millennium Falcon.
Wow.
That has been figured out. Every nut, every bolt, every wheel rim, everything. And if you purchased all of the 130 some odd kits that it came from, you'd spend something like $7,000 or $8,000. This is ridiculous. And some people have made castings of stuff, and on the RPF part slots show up from time to time. I managed to get the Porsche transmission that is on both the right and left side of the loading mandibles for the Falcon and stuff like that. But I am not going for a perfect fidelity to the 3 foot shooting model, because the 3 foot shooting model does not have a perfect fidelity to the 6 foot shooting model, does not have a perfect fidelity to the 2 foot, 1 foot. At ILM, when you had to do this, you'd get the major details right and you'd fill the other stuff in because nobody's really paying that close attention.
Right. Well,
I'm going to be.
They are.
Yes. But as I'm considering myself a bona fide ILM model maker,
yes.
I am going to build this Falcon as if I was building it for the 7th movie.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Which is close enough for camera, super lovely, high detailed with a gorgeous paint job, lights, and everything, ready to shoot tomorrow, but it's not going to match in every single detail, every bit of gear from the, Tamiya Flakvierling, blah, blah, blah.
So my question to you is, because you've acquired and you've built so much,
yes,
does your list change?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
And are there things that you feel like you're going to replace because it's not good enough?
You know, I have a really... Well, there's always stuff that I'm going to replace because it's not good enough. But that list gets smaller and smaller. I have a fourth category, which is things from the world that I've always wanted. Mm. Like last year, I picked up a Curta hand computer. Did we do a piece on the Curta?
We didn't do the Curta, but we did your microscope.
Right.
We did
so we should talk the about IBM the Curta tubes. At some point
we should definitely do the
it's
Curta.
It's an amazing little machine. An Enigma cryptography machine, German Enigma.
Did you know about the Enigma emulator on Kickstarter right now?
Not only did I know about it, I immediately put in my, I want to be one of the highest level funders. I want the complete finished box.
You're ready to go.
In fact, at the highest level, you actually get the punch board with the jumper leads in the front.
Really?
Yeah. It's absolutely, I'm very excited about that. I also have the electronic kit that Bletchley Park put out. So Enigma machines, I always want one. I don't think I'm ever going to own one because they're crazy expensive.
Not many survived, right? I mean, I assume...
There are enough about where... But 10 years ago, you could have picked up an Enigma for about $20,000.
That actually seems like it's expensive.
Price.
Seems like a reasonable price.
Since the Enigma movie came out with Kate Winslet.
Oh, yeah.
And then just more interest in that kind of old stuff. They're more now. I'd say more in the $25,000 to $35,000 range now. You know, never say never. I might find one in a thrift store in Vail someday. Who knows? So that's objects, right? Like old Cray.
Yeah. And also
ejection seats. Old Cray memory.
And to be clear, we don't need the original. We're not talking about owning the original prop or the original object, but a replica of something emblematic of
this
that.
This is true. Well, when it comes to costume, there's stuff in progress that I still want to put on. Like, alien spacesuit, still not quite finished. Close, still not quite finished. Iron Man Mark III armor, still not quite finished.
When you say putting on is the final step.
I mean, putting on and wearing.
And that then achieves the checkbox.
Absolutely.
I want a jetpack. If that's what we're talking about, I want one of the jetpacks that's killed, say, 3 out of every 10 people that used it. That sounds awesome. Like, if you want, I wanted something that's slightly more dangerous than a motorcycle.
It 7 times.
I don't think I'd ever, I think I'd be too afraid to ride it. I would just like to have it. Oh, yeah. If you need me, I'll be in the garage working on my jetpack.
You know, as far as hand props go, I'm trying to think about a hand prop that, I mean, really, I'm working on most of my favorite ones, but I'm trying to think if there's one I don't have any of that I really would love. And I'm just going to have to think about that because I'm not sure one immediately springs to mind.
I mean, you like, if you look at the things that we know are your favorite movies, you have Pulp Fiction, you have a good collection of the key items, maybe not the perfect Jules gun, not, you know, the perfect pack of cigarettes.
Actually,
the cigarettes are
red apple cigarettes,
actually perfect. So I shouldn't have said that, but,
I saw technically absolutely accurate.
But yeah, like I feel like the stuff that you, like, I look at the Indiana Jones, I've been looking at the Indiana Jones shelf the entire time we've been talking about this.
Now it's bigger than a hand prop, but I have always wanted a complete Ark of the Covenant.
Mm.
Always. And actually, so what I've got up there are the cherubs, and I have beautiful sculpts of the bas reliefs that were on the three sides, the front and two sides of the Ark of the Covenant. And I have been talking to a guy who's doing some castings about getting the lip molding. The hell would you put it? It's giant.
I mean, you just have to hang a do not open sign on it, right?
Oh, right, exactly. Yeah. Don't look at it.
It's why I prefer the hand props.
Yeah,
you know,
it's true.
You put on your desk.
I mean, that's the problem for me, why I've never made an Ark of the Covenant, because it's giant.
Yeah.
And there's literally nowhere I could put it in here.
Hmm.
You know, I achieved the Terminator last year. I definitely want a, there's also furniture, right? I mean, we're going to do a build on this.
Yeah.
I'm going to make the captain's chair from Star Trek.
Yeah, we want to.
Oh, yeah.
We'll make videos of
that. That's going to happen. And that's going to happen on camera.
And you're doing the TOS one. I would go with the Picard.
Oh,
because it
is cool.
No, it's so ugly. It's so ugly. Really? It rolls back into cool.
Do you know what? Wait a second. I do have a hand prop that I would love.
Okay.
Aragorn's sword.
Mm.
I have a really nice version of it, but I would want the stunt fighting aluminum ground Weta Workshop Aragorn sword.
Does it have a name? His sword has a name.
Don't they sell that?
They do, but it's what they sell a Weta sells a super limited edition, incredibly high quality, made by their master swordsmith version of all of their weapons, and they're in the tens of thousands of dollars.
Okay. Well, because they're made by their master swordsmith.
And they should be. I do not begrudge them that price, but I am not going to spend that.
So Aragorn sword. Okay, Lord of the Rings.
Another costume, Excalibur armor. Aluminum Excalibur armor, which is made by Terry English, who also made the armor from Aliens. The samurai helmet armor and the shoulder armor for the Marines and Aliens. He is actually now the royal armorer to the Queen of England.
Wow.
Yeah. And he did all the armor for Excalibur. And if you've never seen Excalibur, you should see it. All the armor is actually hand hammered against a log.
Wow.
With aluminum sheet. And it's so beautiful. Nobody's ever made medieval armor more beautiful. And it's not very historically accurate. It's just gorgeous.
You know, you could probably get the Shards of Narsil. That's the name of the sword.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Narsil?
Nosril?
I'm not going to touch that.
Anyway, I bet you could get the broken pieces for less than...
slightly used?
Yeah.
Slightly used. Right. It's the Middle Earth Craigslist.
You get that in the stump, right? You put them next to each other in a little case.
It's the Craigslist.
Right. Exactly.
Middle Earth. Those are pretty close. Yeah. Like I said, the costumes, the alien spacesuit. I'm always into Apollo era spacesuits.
Yeah.
Or
Mercury
gloves,
for that matter.
Right, Mercury era, or even more modern. You know, the fiberglass shell, the stuff that the shuttle, the EMUs, the shuttle astronauts wear.
Right. I love those orange jumpsuit, the pressure suits that they use during launch and take and landing. Those are great.
I love those too, and that is something I plan to add to my collection.
Yeah, I gotta imagine there are a lot of those. That they made lots of those over the 15, 20 years that they used.
Well, I don't think I'm gonna buy one.
No. I mean. But yeah, I would assume that there's a lot of unflown leftovers that will
be, at
some point go out into the world.
I recently met a wonderful photographer, Dan Winter, who is also a space nut like me. We've been trading back and forth space pictures. He's actually gotten to photograph some pretty amazing pieces.
Wow. I can't even imagine. If you go into those archives,
It's crazy. Oh,
NASA archives.
We gotta get you guys into one of those archives.
You know, we talked to when we were at Houston last year, we talked to one of the guys who ran the equipment pool for the pool that they do all the training in. And one of the things we've talked to him about is like the archival stuff of the gloves and all that. Like a lot of that stuff just breaks down and they just don't know what to do.
Well, and
with
we
it.
Talked about this because I went to Huntsville and they have a bin full of old gloves and all this early NASA hardware is all natural materials that all just rots and deteriorates. So gloves stored like this is just going to be like this for the rest of its life.
Yeah.
And I find myself wondering if we couldn't somehow work out a thing with NASA where we crowdsourced some solutions. Like, you guys take a glove that's particularly egregious, that will never be rescued.
Right.
Send us four or five swatches and let us find some people who want to try and resuscitate the materials or laser scan them in order to,
archive them,
what these original constructions were like.
Because, I mean, one of the things NASA's really good about, you know, they took a lot of film on the moon and on the early NASA missions, and they still haven't developed some of it. Some of it's still sitting undeveloped because they're like, we'll be better at this 20 years from now. Who knows?
Exactly.
I have to assume that preservation could go the same way.
Yeah.
And I bet a lot of the people who build replicas of props have the kind of obsessive attention to detail
that
you need to go through and recreate.
There's
stuff.
A wonderful guy named Tom Spina who has done incredible restorations of some of the original American Werewolf in London props for Bob Burns. There's wonderful restoration projects that happen on the RPF all the time. Well, and that's exactly the kind of ethos that I'd love to tap into for NASA.
And even if you don't make something that could fly in space, which you don't need, it would be wonderful to have replicas that are high quality that can go in museums and things like that so that people can actually see what a Mercury suit looked like or a Apollo suit would look like or whatever.
Exactly.
I think this was a good talk.
That is definitely a good talk, and I'm looking forward to reading the comments.
We started with cosmos and ended with space.
Yes, that's fantastic. High fives all around.
If you want to know about premium memberships on Tested, we have a lot of great behind the scenes information at tested.com/premium. You should totally check it out. That's the list of all the videos we have. And then also, if you would rate us on iTunes, leave a comment.
Please rate us on iTunes.
Like us.
We really appreciate it.
Dislike us on YouTube. That's fine. Whatever. We're good either way.
Wait, people dislike things on YouTube?
There's a thumbs down on YouTube.
No.
Who new. That'll do it for us this week. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you all soon. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, we don't have to wait because the camera's off. Oh, sorry. The camera is off. That was my bad. See you guys next week.